Know Your Roots, Episode 8. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have Aaron and TJ from Offset Med to address the pandemic and how dancers are continuously adapting to this new normal. A lot of great insight in this one. Hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Know Your Roots. After a little hiatus, we are excited to be back, and we have the pleasure of having Offset Med with us. We have Aaron and TJ, our main hosts today, are Nico, my co, and
hello,
myself. And we just, you know, wanted to have like a nice little conversation. First off, we'll let our guests introduce themselves. We'll hand the floor over to you guys.
Right. What's up, everyone? This is Aaron speaking now, if you're just listening to the pod, co-founder of Offset Med and CEO of Offset Med. Super blessed, super grateful to get on the show here with TJ. We've got a lot of stuff that we're super excited to cover and talk about. But just a brief intro. I'm currently a practicing athletic trainer in Southern California. I'm also an adjunct professor as well. So I teach health, fitness, injury prevention to dancers as well at the collegiate level. I've worked with a variety of different performing arts group. So we got a big amusement park here in Anaheim, California that reflects the Orlando location that I cannot explicitly say, but was with them for a while and also helped out with marching band, actors, musicians, as well. So yeah, hand it off to you, TJ.
Thanks for having me on the podcast as well. My name is TJ. My background's in occupational therapy. My connection to the dance scene is actually fairly long. I didn't dance per se in any team, but I was in an accident prior to like being exposed to the SoCal dance community, but my affiliations were Six Step, now with Quest Crew. And during that time, the explosion of dance on YouTube. So like, I have a lot of friends throughout that are like famous now, which is still kind of crazy to see. But that's me in a nutshell. Another co-founder of Offset Med, connected with Aaron through good old social media with same intentions of doing better. Just seeing friends come up from like the YouTube generation into whole like ABDC, World of Dance. I've always just wanted to help, and I was headed toward a health field and just seeing the lack of resources or the lack of treatment for dancers. And that's where our collaboration came.
Cool, cool. So you alluded to it a little bit right there, but yeah, can you tell us like the origin story of Offset Med and like how y'all decided to create it and also how long it's been around?
Shoot, do you want me to tell it, TJ?
We had beef. How about that? We'll start with some drama.
Ooh, yeah, just like beef. Just like Seed, just like John and I, we had beef.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I guess you could say that we were both kind of headed in this direction, but never knowing that our paths would really collide. You know, social media, that's how I ended up meeting TJ. And it was all because of a legal battle that was happening among healthcare professions. So just to give the audience some context, athletic training is not a licensed health profession in the state of California like it is in the other states. So there was an effort by our state organization to lobby and then make it create a licensing board. And that really upset a lot of other healthcare professions in the state, OT specifically, because at the time they wanted to merge with the OT board. So I guess I had a mutual friend, or I had a friend that posted something and on TJ's feed, and it got pretty messy because you know how it is communicating on social. There's not a lot of context, words can get miscommunicated, and I felt super bad because we had mutual friends, because you know how on Instagram it kind of shows you like who you know. And I was like, man, he's working with all the cool people. This is somebody I don't want to have beef with.
Dicey.
You can go from there, DJ.
Yes. Oh, so Aaron explained it better, because it's just at the time I was like super hardcore, like OT is everything. And Aaron came in and was like, oh, like his classmate was very blunt. And I was like, whoa, I'm not confrontational. And then when he came out, the context and behind it, I was like, oh, it makes sense. We're kind of in the same team. And I was like, hey, I see that you know people. Like, if you're in town, let's like meet up in person. I think that's kind of how it went. Aaron was finishing up his last year. He knew the people that I was working with, just friends with, and just like my vision of what was going on. And I think that's when like the brainstorm happened. And
That happened like summer of 2018. I like got back, we talked, we connected with other professionals, which is kind of crazy because at the time, not many people knew who they were, but now they have a very strong social media following. So I remember the original meeting. It was at the Kinja's studio in like, was it, I'm forgetting the city, the one that they closed down before they opened Complex.
Monterey Park.
Yeah, it was me, TJ, Dr. McGill on Mario, and then a good friend of mine, Rob Sai, who runs the page Dance Prehab. And we were kind of just brainstorming and talking about the need for access and quality care in the dance community specifically. And we didn't really know what it could be or turn into. So, you know, basically at that point, we were trying to, and this was me with like my, I guess, AT lens. We were like, you know, let's just try events first and see what a turnout is like, how people will respond, and just go from there. So I remember the first event that we covered, because I just, you know, being in the dance community, you know, the people who are running these events and you have a working relationship with them already. So I contacted Danny, who runs Happiness Is Now and also the Team Millennia Bridge competition and their summer intensive. So that their summer intensive was like the first one that we covered. And then from there, it was just putting the pieces together and we kind of just went from there.
Was that the summer intensive or was it really hot?
It was super hot, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was brutal.
Okay, we need those workout dance in the heat tips for our Florida community a bit later. So
but yeah, no, that's wild to me. I would have never thought that like OT and AT would come at each other that in that regard. But I mean, it's good to see that. I mean, I'm assuming that that's resolved now, or like, I mean, you guys are obviously working together. And
nah, still beef. I'm just kidding.
OT, ATB.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it wasn't anything of our fault. When you're in your schooling, it's very like, that's your lane and that's all they teach you.
Yeah.
That like, you kind of get like tunnel vision of it. And when you see other people, it's just like, oh, but we're all on the same team. We're all doing very similar things, or pretty much the same thing, just different point of views or different like terminology. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that I liked about TJ was that, you know, the more we worked together and the more we talked, you know, it wasn't the fact that our techniques and approaches were different, but it was the fact that we could think about why we chose this method or why we are working in this manner. And if there was something better, we could switch and change our minds. And it's kind of like that flexibility, adaptability, and like willingness to humble each other and learn from each other that we wanted to have as like a value or a principle between like anyone else in our network. And as we kind of grew, we attracted people and other clinicians and practitioners, coaches, trainers that fell in line with that. And it's been pretty cool to kind of see that evolve, because I mean, shoot, it wasn't this whole idea of like merging or bringing healthcare and fitness into a dance specific role. When I was in school, that was like just getting, or just picking up steam. And I can't even imagine what it was like for TJ. I don't know if it even existed at that point.
No, I was just doing those like four basic stretches. And I was like, I'm good. I don't need to work out because my dance is the workout. I just got to keep dancing more. It's like, you know, the therapy end is where like you start seeing people after they're hurt. And that's when like, that's where like my change of thought during my school was very like, they teach all these techniques, treatment ideas, and they're very like, oh, well, why is it that we always got to treat after you get hurt? Like, I was just getting so burned out of like, after you get hurt. I was like, there's more that needs to be done. And they kind of just branch out within our lane, so to speak. And that's how like we started Offset Med.
Yeah, I'm like seeing the chat blow off right now.
they're calling me out because I don't do, like, my training is just like, yeah, dance more. Like, I started with breaking. For me, it was just like, oh, I'll listen to my body. If something hurts, then I'll like give it a few days rest and then get back to it. But I never did any like conscious prevention of injury. It's just like, if I don't have good technique, I'm going to hurt myself. So that was my motivation for getting good technique, at least in breaking. So like, I know that's how a lot of other dancers, choreo wise or otherwise, approach the art and the form. So that's like kind of good segue into one of the topics we want to talk about, which is like, as you said, you saw this as a big mindset in the community. So like, what is kind of the first things you tell a dancer about different exercises and movements you can do to actively improve injury prevention as well as like long-term health?
Yeah. I mean, there is something that I want to kind of revisit and pull out on what you said, Nico, which was kind of like the mentality of a dancer, right? I think every dancer comes like a unique package. Like, they have their experience and what they bring to the table. So our advice is usually tailored towards that individual dancer. Like for you, Nico, you had breaking as your foundation and you've had that time and experience before you switched in choreo. So the understanding of your body, its limitations, what it can do, and the technique, that is completely different context than someone who's starting choreo for the first time in a collegiate dance team, right? So the training age or technique age for dance is different. And I think that's something that dancers in general, you know, should understand. And that kind of ties in back to the question. Like, when it kind of comes to injury prevention, you know, your technique is only as good as, you know, the context that it's placed under, right? You may not have to do a warm up or stretch out very much if you know what you're doing the day is like something you can handle. But if it was like, hey man, you're not going to leave this room till you get like 30 head spins, like, you might feel a little broken after, right? It's very context dependent. And I think what hurts dancers sometimes is just like the understanding and connection points between where they are, where they want to go, and then what is actually happening or what's expected of them, like in the moment. Because it's an art form, you can't track it like a metric like other sports. Like, there's not a certain vertical you need to reach. There's not a certain amount of torque or force plate production that you may need to do, at least who we know now. I mean, dance medicine research is coming and is developing, but there are things that stand the test of time. And one of those things is kind of like having solid technique and solid foundation, because it imposes a self-limitation. And then when dancers override that or think they can do more or go longer without the prep work, that's where things get a little dicey. And that's kind of like my perspective. TJ, I don't know if you want to spin off that. Or...
You said everything right. On my end, it's very like dancing at the college level or dancing coming up. There's also a lot of social demands going on because like you're juggling job, school, life on top of dance, long practices. You know, there's like a whole lifestyle to it where like, it's just like, oh, let's just go eat some like 99 cents thing or like stay up all night. Red Bulls, water, you know, like, there's a lot going on.
That's actually me. So,
I mean, no, that's a part of it that's throughout, you know,
this is like, a roast Nico podcast.
It's like, how do you know so much about me already?
it's been all of us when even down here, that's how like, we're thinking like, it's like, why can't be better? But that's because there was a lack of resources. But I know it's hard as a student. As a full-time dancer, there's a lot more demands on your body. So it's like, it is hard to see that the athlete artistry when there's a lot of things going on. Because it's not like regular athletes where they just go like college and like, oh, you got this access to this training room, the full-on health staff and this and that. Like, it's a side thing that's going on. You're there because you want to do it, first of all. So like your love of dance and community. And so like we're trying to make it so the community itself knows more so we can elevate each other. Because even like the things put in place was very just like handing it off to the next person, or like that leadership wasn't built in as much to kind of uplift and bring each other up. It's more like popular one. He's the next chord. Why? I don't know. I just like him. We need to like put in more resources and more things for us to kind of elevate each other to make it better for everybody.
So yeah, as far as like establishing more process and support, like as I talked a little before the podcast started, like, yeah, there's so much turnover and it's a lot of just handoff. There's no system in place or network in place afterwards. So that's definitely one of Seed's like primary goals. And like, hopefully we have like some documentation after this talk and, you know, maybe working with you guys to like provide to our teams that we help support to like really give them that resources as well.
Just this like kind of shift, if you have any advice for dancers that may be stuck in that creative rut, or even just struggling to get into training, that's like one of the main things like our board came together on, like maybe we can ask Offset that. So
it's a general question, so let me know if you want some more specific answers as I go on.
Go for it. Yeah.
I think TJ touched on this earlier too. It's just that, you know, the most of the time, not always, but you know, you get into a collegiate dance team because you're looking for the social aspect of it, like to connect with people, build a family, build relationships, and also like get better at doing something that you love with people who also love doing it. I think the same thing could be applied to fitness, to self-improvement, right? I mean, you've kind of heard that typical cliche montage, like you are the, you know, the sum or the average of the five people you're the most around with. They talk with the most, right? Because these people will influence your life and be accountable for what you do. And when it comes to, I guess, the nitty-gritty of it, you know, a lot of dance teams are kind of put out of commission right now because of COVID, and they can't practice in the way that they used to practice before. And tradition, at least in my experience, has always been a huge thing in dance teams, sometimes too much to the point where change can't happen. But those that are able to adapt and reimagine what a future can look like that is quote unquote pandemic proof and how you can still make progress, I think it's going to include some sort of educational training, movement training that goes beyond just learning the 8 counts of choreography, right? I think it gives the opportunity for dancers to explore other things that they may have missed if they were doing dance team school like full time. And that is the opportunity to take classes from more experienced people, whether that's fitness classes or dance classes in general. I've often found that the older dancers have a better appreciation, understanding of their bodies, and will implement that into the way that they teach, in the way they warm up, in the way that they coach. Which is important for a young dancer to learn and to be really keen to pick up on, because those are kind of the intangible skills that, you know, you're supposed to get when you're in the group or in the unit, but you may not be as conscious about, rather than just trying to pick up the choreography. But that's just some of the tips that I would probably give. I hand it off to you, TJ.
Aaron says it's so much nicer. I'm going to say like, yo, quarantine waiter's real. It's like that freshman 15. That quarantine 15 is real. Like, we just stopped doing a lot of stuff. So my biggest thing when I talk to friends is that just keep active as much as you can, because especially my connection with like the industry side of it is that when things open up, jobs are going to come back 100%. So if we're going to go from 0 to 100 really fast, the dancers have to be ready for it to come up. So it's like, well, from not doing anything during COVID to booking a bunch of jobs and going back to work, can't go that fast where you're just bound to get hurt. I mean, you've seen it across like sports, like the first month of like basketball, football, you saw like just injuries over and over. It's like, guess you know what they were doing, you know, they like, because they weren't as active as before. So it's kind of making sure you guys are doing things that are active, even if it's like taking like a Zoom class or just going outside, just kind of doing that, as well as reconnect, meditation, find out about ourselves to kind of slow down, like a lot of things that Aaron talked about. Time to kind of get the foundations right. And like the foundations are just movement, push, pull, twist, things like that. Cause that's what's going to supplement you now when we get back. And even the mental, like I know there's like things going on in the political climate, personal climate, that it's just a lot to handle. And that also ties into your health.
Yeah.
Mental and physical is very, very connected.
I'm gonna piggyback off you, TJ, because just being in a pandemic is already like enough. And I've had conversations with dancers in the past that they almost feel like this sense of guilt or pressure that they have to like train, take class, work out, and like do something productive during this time. And it's almost like you always have to kind of go back to like your own why on what are you really kind of like chasing this for? Like, are you chasing the outcome or are you enjoying the process to get there too? Right. And it's different. Like the way you'll approach it, the intentions behind the actions will feel different. And I don't dance as much as I used to, but I have picked up a lot of training. And one thing that kind of helped me get through it was finding someone to hold me accountable for like a program or just picking something to do consistently so that you have a plan, so that you have some sort of predictability in life where everything feels so unpredictable. Control versus chaos continuum. When there's a lot of chaos and we're going to try and find ways to exercise our own control, and like vice versa. When we have too much control, things are getting stale, super comfortable, then we try and spice things up, right? It's kind of knowing where you are in that spectrum and having friends that have goals aligned with you can help you see it when you can't see it yourself. Like that's why TJ is like, he's almost like my yin to my yang in a sense. Because he'll pull me out of ruts and things like that too. So social accountability is like super important. But like you said, just pick and do something, but don't hold yourself to like a steel standard. Be flexible with it, because all the work that you do it, if you come out with a good intention to learn, enjoy the process, that's going to compound over time rather than just like trying to hit a number, trying to hit a certain outcome, trying to, you know, flex on people and be like, I read 12 books this year, or like I took 40 classes this month. Like, so what would you get out of it? How's it going to show?
And like, for me, like that definitely relate to that. Like from May to November, I was just like really super busy. Felt like I had to like always be like, I was on this like, you know, like dance, online dance program tip. So that's like all I was doing for like 6 months basically. And at first it was really good, like definitely kept me accountable to, you know, the mentor, to this, my classmates, to myself, because I was paying money for it. And then by the time I got to like the 7, 8, 9, 10th program, I was like, it was more like I was just doing programs to do programs. And I mean, I still got like I really fully appreciate, you know, those last ones I was doing, but it did get to a point where I was like, okay, I'm not getting the most out of the process. You know, I lost sight of like why, like what I really was doing it for, or like to like get that intrinsic benefit, that knowledge of the mentor. But then it devolved into kind of just keeping me busy, which isn't like a totally bad thing in myself, but at that time I didn't need to be busy. So all of December I just chilled and did nothing, which was really good for me. And then now I'm not doing anything guided. I'm doing a lot of like self-guided, just projects and things I want to do. And that's been like, you know, just as fulfilling. And but like also I'm getting to apply what I was learning last year, basically. So definitely like agree with all of that. Like it was good for me to just be aware of where I was at and like where I was going and like what might have been good for me. Now, 6 months ago, 3 months later, that's like my situation changes. And there's, you know, it's always good to try something new or just straight up take a break, which is what I did. So like, definitely appreciate that for sure.
And that's really good, because that's all just part of the growing process. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're all evolving, even from the beginning of the pandemic. I've been like, my evolving was like trying to figure out what's happening next, what's going to happen next. But there's so much you can do to like, even throughout the pandemic. Offset Meta was trying to help out studios, like giving you resources. There's so much of things where you could keep planning for what's going to happen next. Cause like every week there's something going on every week, or every month last year, or it's like just getting prepared. Or if we could set a high standard of things, doing the minimum wasn't working. Like across the board, you know, even from you guys to where we're at, like there's different standards of like guidelines or COVID going on. So it's like, well, what do we do that we could kind of elevate each other, just hold everyone to a higher level, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, flexibility. I mean, it's really key in this day and age, because I know for us, like events after events may have been canceled, just in general. Like you can have a lot of things lined up for you, but it's really like it comes down to like ability to adapt now and just do what we can. One of like my biggest issues like going to the pandemic was like instantly comparing my progress to like others. Nico, like he went like headfirst into programs, but I knew you know, on my own journey, like I have school, I have like seed that I can focus on. And I guess it's just really good to see us finding, you know, at least one or two things that we can like really devote our heart and minds to and kind of see it through, regardless of like whatever anybody else thinks or that internal gnawing of like, you should be doing this quicker, you should be doing this more efficiently. That's just kind of what was sitting in my head like early pandemic. I've had conversations with other creatives that this is just a thing now, like something we deal with internally. So in that regard, like one of the other focuses we want to cover is safety. Of course, being in the healthcare world, like there's standards to uphold, and like you gotta make sure like your clients are safe, your staff is safe. And this is like a toughy one for us too, because we did kind of throw an event like in person. Like this was back in October, and like we required masks. We like make sure we limited it to a certain number of people, but we kind of wanted to see your take. And I know being in California, it's a lot different over there, but just we kind of wanted to see what like your opinion on safety or like how the regulations are or where you are at.
I think before we would kind of jump into it, we would say these are just all recommendations. We're not the end all be all. It's always, you know, abide by local national rules. In the beginning of it, it was very like trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, that's what like everyone was doing. Me and Aaron were looking at it from like sports lens. The protocols and resources and things that we came up with was through a combination of different people within our network, from like people we know that are training, going to Olympics, to like NBA, like throughout our network, then collectively, what would work out the best in the dance world. And you want to jump into it, Aaron?
Like, yeah, I can. When we talk about safety in dance, I think part of the issue of that is, you know, like you said, for collegiate dance teams, and just like hosting events, live competitions, whatever, it requires, I guess, like a couple different sacrifices on the dancers and the people who are hosting it, that it's kind of like an unspoken rule if you are going to do it. Because based on all the data and all the information that we have right now, gonna be honest, US, we suck at containment. Our government, our federal to state to local mandates, it's so different. So different, which creates a psychological environment that's gonna affect behavior. And if we're in the game of behavior change and trying to have people take public health policy seriously, and it was already hard enough to get dancers to like think about their health, this is an uphill battle. So when it comes to actual like safety for events, there is going to be some like local, I guess, like flexibility, but no matter what, like the risk of doing it is going to be based on how much the event hosts and organizers are willing to take and willing to, are able to control, but also a risk on the dancer who's participating. And, you know, our conversations with dancers from dance teams and leaders and boards, you can't make it a cookie cutter approach, because people's lives are so interconnected into everything that's happened. You know, like you may have dancers on your team that live with family members who are immunocompromised. You may have dancers that can no longer commute because they had to move back home. Some dancers may be financially impacted severely to where like dance used to be their hobby and their place to let go, but now they're being pulled in another direction in life, right? So one of the toxic things that kind of came out from our dance competition side of things is this that idea that you had to make dance life and ride or die. And if you weren't part of this like go, go, go mentality, then you're not going to get casted. I don't see your dedication, right? Like, I think that is a very cop-out way to exercise good leadership. And this is something that we need during this time. So, you know, aside from all the legal things, culturally, educationally, like people just need to get on the same page and figure out, you know, what's more important. Is it my privilege to perform, or is it, you know, the health and safety of my fellow team members, and what expectation, what standard, what values do I want to portray about myself and my community? And I think that's probably where the behavior change will come from, when you change someone's like identity. And hopefully, you know, what you guys are doing at Seed in promoting this type of environment and culture and conversation, it does push it in that direction.
Just as a disclaimer, like from that event that we had, like moving forward, we realized that it would be better to kind of halt all in-person activities just from our stance. Hence, like we won't be having any like performance teams. We're really sad about, but like just looking statewide here in Florida, like our regulations in itself, it's just so haywire. We don't really have like those strict, you know, rules. And there's a reason why like cities all across Florida were like epicenters of the pandemic at one point. And it's just a little concerning for me too, because when we look on social media, I'm gonna get a little dicey here, just a heads up. But like when we look at social media and like we see the people we look up to like doing projects, doing like big group stuff, I'll say, all together in one place and not exactly in the safest of manners, aka maskless. It's just gets really iffy for me, just because I know like what you've said, kind of got to think about the interconnectedness of these, you know, dancers' personal lives. And I can't have a say on like what everybody on my team does, but at least I know one or two of these people like are related to someone at risk. It kind of gives me a little bit of anxiety just to think about. And moving forward, if we're to like really try to put an end to this pandemic, I know it's hard to say like cease all, but it's just kind of thinking like what's realistic for our dancers, you know? It's tough. It's like,
yeah, really it's there's no easy answer. And the conversations that TJ and I have had with other, you know, business owners that still need to make a living, studio owners, and teams as well. Like dance in it of itself is kind of like its own economic ecosystem. But while a cease all is like in theory, like, okay, that seems to be what everyone is saying, it's not practical. So we usually try and see what is the most practical way for people to kind of continue. And I think it probably would help by just like kind of breaking down some of the reasons you may or may not want to do certain things. And then TJ, feel free to jump in anytime. So let's just take something that's like current, for example. Like you guys have the Super Bowl coming up in Florida, right? And they're allowing in-person seating. For someone who doesn't know the full details, right? It could be thought as like they're sending a bad message to everyone that you can just fill up football stadiums with people and play games, which is, you know, not exactly the case, because as someone who does have communications with what's happening in the NFL and the NBA, they have, well, number one, money. Number two, the players are their assets. And as a business, you want to protect your assets as much as possible. So there are systems, structures, protocols in place to ensure as much safety as possible, just like how the NBA bubble was was created and able to succeed. So, you know, one of the things that TJ and I try and explain to people is that while it would be ideal if you could have people tested, rapid tested on site, get your results back, if you could somehow isolate dancers into kind of pods where you know that this is one community or group of people that are in high contact with each other, but not mixing. Not right now, we're in this like interesting phase where some people are getting vaccinations as well. So that also has another layer of risk protection if you're able to, or at least when you're qualified to. And we know that the virus is mostly airborne. So mask covering is a must. If you still have someone who is non-compliant with mask wearing, then they're breaking like a code of conduct. So it's like, what do you want to do? And if you don't do it, I hope you have a plan to handle the risk that fall it. It becomes a conversation of ethics then at that point, you know? And that's kind of why TJ and I are also, we promote this three-prong, like body, mind, soul, body, mind, spirit type of thing where, you know, your decisions day in and day out affect how you're going to feel about the outcome of all this, right? You make a decision not to follow a rule. You have a family member get sick and test positive because of you. That's on you. But if you feel like you've done everything you can and that still happens, I would bet that you'd still have an easier conscience than the latter. So this is something that is affecting everybody. And there's no right or wrong answer. There's one right answer for one set of contexts, rules, and situations. And that's why it's hard to find. It's hard, especially when you see the people that you guys look up to, like do things. And part of it's because you may not know the full information, but then also the other part is like, does that align with what you want to do and how you want to portray yourself too?
No, those are like all really good points. It's much more nuanced than just like, if you're meeting people, you're doing something absolutely wrong. Or like also it's not practical to say like everything full stop, especially in the American like mentality of, you know, very individualistic and wanting freedoms and liberties and whatnot. So that's not like something that is like easy to like force everyone to do, even though that's in theory the right thing to do. So like with that said, I know y'all had like experience actually putting guidelines in place, I believe. It was a jam, a breaking jam in Vegas, was that?
Yeah.
So, I forgot exactly which one, but yeah, could you tell us like your experience running that and making sure everything was compliant, and also like the outcomes, like how was it received, and would you like consider it successful?
So I think we could go even pre-pandemic when we would actually staff events, because if you actually look at events, like think of all the competitions and things you guys been to, and then did you guys, like you would see like an EMT, someone got hurt, but there wasn't actually health people there. So our biggest thing was we want to bridge it. We're there as an extension of the event, the people running it. Like we're all on the same page. We're not just like, oh, someone got hurt. Here comes someone that helps at the end that has nothing to do with it. So even in our involvement with an event during the last year, it was very like that. Like we're all on the same team. These are the recommendations that we're going to be giving, enforcing. And you need to know that this is to help out our community, your community. We're all in this together. So there was a set of guidelines, set of rules that we put up of just like masks, distance, like sanitation. Like the specifics will be kind of different if we're going to throw on like a different event through, but like made sure that the best practices and like the minimum was set high, make sure no one else gets sick. So like we made sure there was pods, there was a different time and kids and adults. If we knew that some people were like already together, put them together. Before it was very like, oh, like show up for registration around this time. Now we have like a specific call sheet of where we could track and monitor a lot of things. And it was kind of hard because once the event started going, is that we got that feeling of, oh, like before,
when dance events start at like 8 and then prelims start at 9:30.
There's always that the announcement like, oh, we're running about a little bit behind. It's like, no, yeah, we need to get everything under control, kind of a thing. So to mitigate risk, and that was like the biggest part. All the sanitation things that we got was, it's nothing new. CDC, NBA, it's things that we do already. So we're kind of putting it all into this that we didn't do before. Or now we look at it in the event, like there's a lot of like holes. So kind of making it better.
Yeah.
And I was kind of vague, but it's just like, yeah.
Yeah. And we talk about these conversations too with the people we consult with. It's like, you know, how big is your venue? How many people are you expecting? Do you have a budget for this? How long are you renting the space for? And what are your plans for this? And, you know, the more information that we get from the organizer, you know, our job is to, it sounds pretty bad when I will say this, but it's like, just think of the worst case scenario and how do you plan for it, right? And Julie will probably know emergency action plan, EAPs are like a big thing in AT, but you adapt that to now layering on this nuance of like, well, what happens if there's a airborne virus involved? It does take a lot of work, but because the organization and the people who are going to implement it, it requires that work. It's kind of naturally, they will do their best to enforce it when it happens because they're trying to look out for their community. They're trying to look out for their family. They're trying to look out for themselves. Like no one wants to get sick either. So you kind of have to give everyone some ownership on the table so that they can act on it and see it through. So our job really is to, you know, help guide people through this the best way that we know how, make sure that they take the precautions that they need to, and communicate that within their organization, within their events. And so by the time that the event actually starts, everything should be planned already. Everyone should be on the same page and understand what needs to happen. And if someone does not abide by what is happening, then we all have each other's back and can agree on the next course of action. Because that's usually where things start to break down and you get people, I guess, like kind of wishy-washy on like what's supposed to happen. You got to hold yourself to a higher standard and then reflect that on the people that are participating as well, because it is not, you know, quote unquote normal yet. So we got to go a little bit above and beyond.
Create a new normal.
Mm-hmm. So.
Really dope stuff. Yo, like, I mean, thanks for that breakdown. We'll definitely like kind of keep that in mind and reach out to y'all because y'all are in this like for real. I don't know when our next like in-person like event would be. Like, again, like our stance is just kind of wait, kind of chill right now and like focus like more on inward stuff, like our mentorship programs and our podcast. So like, but that was really great insight. But kind of to wrap it up, since we're getting to that point, we want to open up to you guys, like if you guys have anything to plug.
If you're not following us at offsetmed.med on our Instagram page, we have some stuff on there you guys yeah. might like.
Yeah, their feed is dope. Yes, make sure you follow them.
Yeah, a lot of our news of things coming up will be posted on there. We've been hosting our community classes, all levels. Not other things to plug. For me, it's very like, I'm excited for when things do come back because I know all this time of self-reflection is going to be communicated through dance, but there are about to be some crazy pieces, I know for sure. So don't like think of it as like, oh, there's nothing going on. Like it's, we're this is like our creative time. So I'm very excited about what's going to happen and things are going to go forward.
For sure. I think TJ said most of the main things. We got our community drop-in class. So that's, if you've never been to a, I guess like a group fitness class before, it's very similar to taking like a dance class. You have an main instructor and you learn the breakdown of each athletic movement. If you have a weight, great. You can challenge yourself more. If you don't have one, we always adapt it for those that don't have access to weights and you want to do body weight. It's a fun thing. We do it every 2 weeks. You can just follow our Instagram page for updates on that. I think later on, we'll be releasing an online mentorship as well.
Yes.
later in the year. We're still kind of working on the logistics and final touches on it, but it is something that we're super excited about. I know last year we did a lot of virtual mentorships called the VME. So we're basically putting a twist on it and making it better. As you know, you try and build it and make it better each time. So hopefully if anyone's listening to this right now and, you know, it's later in the spring, possibly summer, you know, we'll be able to get that out to you guys.
Don't tell me that. I don't need to, another program in my life. No, I'm kidding. But definitely we'll like encourage. And I know there's one that I was like thinking of, and you brought his name up before.
Miguel?
Miguel, yeah. Yeah, Almario. Yeah, he, I know his was called Dancers or Athletes, right?
That's with Movement Society.
Yeah, yeah.
So Miguel's like, he's got his hands in a lot of different things. So Movement Society is another one of our friends' pages. So shout out to Carl, Tanya, and Miguel as well. They have their Dancers or Athletes program where you actually kind of go through a full kind of strength and conditioning program for dancers. And there's, I think it's 6 weeks. And then Miguel and Nisi, they have a Movement Academy program. And that's pretty much a spin on what a, I guess, traditional dance mentorship would look like. You're not just learning choreography, but you're learning like dance, athletic development, and like professional life skills. It's kind of like another like whole dancer approach.
Other friends, Movement Mentality on IG, find them on there. Dance Prehab.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys follow us, we share them on our network and our pages too. It's all about getting the information out there. It's not about competition. The more people, the more, the better. Like, I'm going to be happy when like John, you finish, everyone, like you finish school or that join the healthcare side. It's just more, there's right now, there's more dancers than there are of us. You need to kind of like bring the numbers up.
Oh, that's awesome. I have one more question. So why specifically Offset and not any of the other Migos members?
Oh man. I feel like my answers to this always change, but I think originally my idea was, so this kind of touches back into something we talked about in the beginning of the podcast about like why healthcare isn't proactive, right? I mean, we see it as like sick care. You know, you pay all this money to get treated when you're sick. And you think about that's just kind of like the normal trajectory of the healthcare system. So we wanted to offset that and go our own different way. It was also a play on words with like us working with artists. You know, you have people see the amazing things artists do on set for like film, video, TV, whatever. But then offset is like where the work happens.
Yeah,
multiple areas right here.
We did.
Hitting us everywhere.
You just got to work with Offset now. You'll complete the cycle. But no, that's really great. It was a pleasure, like just having you guys on to chat. We covered a lot today. Like I'm really, really happy with how this went. And for sure, we'll be linking your IG down in our description when we roll it out. But yeah, guys, thanks for joining us on our comeback episode for season one.
We really, yeah, sure.
We also have one last thing to do before we finish up. So when we made our podcast, some of the advice was we need a thing that makes our podcast like a thing, I guess. I don't know. So we have this at the end of every podcast, we say like a bunch of puns centered around plants. So it will be delivered by our lovely social media manager, Julie. Hello.
What's up?
our AT in residence.
Yes, that is me. Let me get the puns. Okay, first one is talk dirt to me. Okay, second one is it's party time. Okay, and then the last one is I'm glad I pricked you.
I'm gonna try out all these three and then let you know what the reactions are.
Okay, great.
Please.
Word. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie.
Of course.
Signing off. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
All right. Thank you, TJ. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Offset. Peace out.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. If you have questions and would like to reach out to Offset Med, we've included their IG handle in the episode description. We got great content planned for the rest of the season, so stay tuned. Peace, y'all.